You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight, we talk about actor John Huston's directorial debut, The Maltese Falcon.
You no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a pair.
Yes, I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes, the dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We are your hosts. I'm editor Brian Elkins. With me here tonight, cinematographer Jared Callen.
Hello, precious. What's the good news?
Oh, wait, is that... We're talking about the Maltese Falcon, not Lord of the Rings, right?
I didn't say my precious.
I said, hello, precious. What's the good news?
Oh, okay. I got it now.
Is that better?
Yeah.
I didn't know Jimmy Stewart was in this movie.
Hey, what's up, Doc? How's the good news?
We also have with us director of photography, Mike Griggs.
What's up?
Howdy. Wait, you want to give us your Bogart? You want to give us your 40 talk?
If I had watched it less than a week ago, maybe I would have had it fresh in my mind.
All right, fair enough. And we also have with us costume designer Kristen Jones.
Hello, hello.
Hey. And here we are talking about the 1941 classic, The Third Time's a Charm, also a remake, The Maltese Falcon.
Third Time's a Charm, what's the third time?
This is the third time this book has been adapted for the screen.
Oh.
It was done in 31. It was a really terrible movie. I really don't recommend watching it. The guy that plays Sam Spade has zero chemistry with anybody, and it's kind of boring on screen. And then The second one is called Satan Met a Lady, starring Betty Davis. And it's a comedy, and it is boring and terrible. Like old school, like stuff that was slapstick humor from the 40s.
Still based on trying to find this idol that's like worth money?
I forget what it is. It's not, it's some other idol. It's like a horn or something, or like a
some other MacGuffin that actually doesn't really matter to the plot. It's just a plot device.
Correct. So you can put this in your list of great remakes.
Well, hold on. You forgot to, I think, include why they made the second one and made it a comedy.
Why is that?
Yeah, why is that?
Well,
I don't think I know.
They took out all the homosexual references that went over my head completely when I watched this the first time.
I guess I missed it totally, yeah.
It was too gay for people, and so they remade it and took out all the homosexual parts.
Are they saying that the fat man and Ren are gay?
Yeah, so apparently Gunsel... It does not just mean like a gunslinger. It also means, hold on, I have the exact definition I actually kept.
Wait, you looked up these 40 terms?
Yes.
Well, of course.
Not all of them, because there were a lot. But, okay, it is a boy or youth who is used for sexual purposes by a man. Yeah.
Wow. A gunsel?
Gunsel, yeah.
Hmm. And which guy was that supposed to be?
Well,
I think it was Peter Lorre in this movie.
Cairo, Samuel Spade at the end says that twice. He says that word twice.
Cairo says Gunsel?
No, he calls him. He says, "It's fucking Gunsel over here," or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and then I think my favorite article, when I was trying to figure out like who was gay in this movie, because again, I did not think, was there's an article from Out magazine where it basically is like, and I'm quoting here, "The Maltese Falcon is Hollywood's first gay masterpiece."
Really?
Wow.
The intense interplay between dominant male Spade and his grasping suitors portrays a uniquely sensual competition over the ideal of manhood. And it goes on. Apparently, they're all gay. And so...
What?
Yeah, it was great. And so when I watched it for the third time, I was like watching it with this lens. And I have to say, it improves the movie.
Really? I didn't think Bogart was gay, but at the end, I thought that Gutman and Cairo, like, were gay.
Yes. And also his little sidekick person who is just
the one
like,
in the trench coat with the hat.
Wilmer.
Yeah.
Oh, he's definitely repressing some serious definitely. Gay rage. Yeah.
Well, but also, I didn't think Humphrey Bogart at first until I was like, actually, he does like turn in this woman. Like, a man would not do that. At least not until she made him angry. No, like, he would wait a little while.
No. He's like Batman. He's got justice on his side.
I mean, yeah, maybe. Okay. He spends the whole movie like having all the women throw themselves at him, and he's like, yeah, well, that's cool, but...
Exactly.
No, he
exactly.
totally sleeps
so
with one of them.
Does he?
Yeah, I mean,
does he?
Yes.
There's like, they made a whole movie about how like you can be married and still have like a gay lover, you know, in the mountains. And so like, I feel like that's true. Not.
Are you talking about Lord of the Rings?
Joaquin McQueen. Goddamn Lord of the Rings. It always comes back to you.
Sam.
If you can't walk, Mr. Frodo, I'll carry you.
Right. Gandalf!
I guess that makes sense following it, but I was just, I don't know. Bogart is just, it seems like such a man's man, and how he's just, I don't know, going around calling every woman, yeah, darling, sure thing,
how
angel.
How you doing there, angel? Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It seems so sexist. It's like, well, you know, a gay man would have more respect for females than that.
Oh, please, come on. but I will say I did think it was funny. I think it had to be the director who was like, yeah, I enjoyed Humphrey Bogart's character. Or maybe it was the writer. He's like, I know a lot of private detectives, and like, this is who they want to be. This is the person that like they think they are in their head.
Wow.
This did like create the big stereotype, right? This is the blueprint for all private eye movies, right?
The gumshoes and such.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much, yeah. I mean, even when we watch Chinatown, you can see where they were lifting a lot from this. I mean, that even has John Huston, who directed and wrote this movie. He's the villain.
Every time Bugs Bunny goes into detective mode, he puts the hat on and rolls a cigarette.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Peter Lorre even shows up in those old Looney Tunes cartoons.
Really?
And Humphrey Bogart, yeah. Like, I mean, they were Warner Brothers stars at the time. Back in the day when we had contract players. So this is the first time you guys have seen it?
Yeah, I've heard about it my whole life. I feel like I've watched dozens of movies as a kid that like referenced this movie. Like the name was always in my head, but I've never actually watched it before. So it was good to actually finally get around to it.
We had to watch it in film school, and I haven't seen it since. And so I totally forgot it.
That's the way to do it, man. You know?
Yeah.
Refall
well,
in love.
You know, you're a different person now, you know? See things a little differently. Sure. So it's kind of cool to watch it through a different lens.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely amazing. I had not seen this movie before, but to actually watch things as an adult with life experience versus when you watch or read them when you're a younger child or a young adult, it's very different.
I think that's got to be like the actual Falcon, whatever you want to go with. I think that's got to be like one of the best fucking film props of all time, or at least one of the most iconic. Like up there with like the ruby slippers from Wizard of Oz.
It's something that you can scratch, and then in the next take, that scratch is gone. So it makes me wonder how many Falcons they actually had.
Three.
Oh, did they?
Apparently.
Wow.
That's what I read.
No.
I didn't read that. I did see that it sold for some ridiculous amount of money at an auction.
But did they know it was the real one?
They scratched
it. Just wrapped up in newspaper.
Yeah. It's gold underneath. I don't want this piece of shit.
So how was this movie received when it came out? Like, was this the beginning of noir films? Was this, like, the middle of a trend?
I mean, noir movies existed before this, especially when you're, like, you got Peter Lorre in this, so it's really hard to not think about German expressionalism and, what was that, M, the movie where Peter Lorre's the serial killer that goes around killing little girls That kind of started all that photography. Well, that not that movie, but like German expressionism started that kind of photography. And then, you know, World War II happened. All the Germans that were like, fuck Nazis and everything else, they left. That's how we get film noir here in the United States. That's where this came from. But this is, I don't know. It's definitely more of a, I don't know. I guess it's kind of got a bleak indie, but like, I guess a lot of film noir is like the endings are kind of dark, a little bit depressing. Not everything's put together. I guess Humphrey Bogart doesn't really get the girl at the end, so...
Yeah, but he solves the case.
Yeah, everybody, like...
That's not a bleak ending. He did his job.
He solves the case and he keeps $1,000 bill to
he passed that in as evidence, because he has a fucking
conscience. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Justice and everything.
I did like how most of the movie you couldn't quite tell, like... Is he kind of in it for himself? Is he playing everybody? Is he the one that's playing himself?
I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of good reveals. Like, I love that reveal where he's just like, I don't want to deal with the wife. And then his partner's wife comes in there and he closes the door and they just embrace and kiss. And you're like, oh, shit.
Oh,
plot thickened.
And then she's like, you killed my husband so we can be together. And he's like, what the fuck?
No.
Of course you would think that. I get that a lot, but no.
Now please leave.
And then the police are coming in, accusing him of bumping off the guy that got killed, that killed his partner. It's just, oh, man.
Man, those two police.
Oh, good cop, bad cop?
I just love how immediately I hated them and then how I spent the entire time loving that I hated them.
My favorite moment with the police was when at some point they're just like, yo, we're just trying to do our job. Can you relax?
Give us something to go on. I don't know. I guess that's why they have that scene with the DA. So you can get a little bit inside of Sam Spade's head. Because before that point, you're really just like, I don't know. You do kind of feel like he's just going after money at that point.
Yeah.
Because he's just such a dick to everybody about his partner dying. Like, every time somebody brings that up, he's just like, oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, he didn't give a fuck that his partner died. I mean, there's that one moment where he, like, looks over and he sees the desk there. And he goes, all right, let's get that desk out of here and scrape his name off the fucking windows. Like,
yep.
He's a little hard to like. He has these moments where, like, he'll when he blows up at the fat man. And he breaks the glass on the table and he's yelling at him and then he walks out of the room. Yeah, and then he's like immediately smiles just to let you know, like, I'm just fucking.
I'm acting. Yeah, yeah.
Just kidding him.
Anytime he does something fucked up, he's got a little smile. Like, even after he kisses his partner's wife, you know, and then he has a little moment there where you're like, whoa, and he kind of breaks it and has a little grin. That's his signature, like,
He says at one point that... you know, he wants to have a bad reputation. It's part of his job. It helps him do his job.
Yeah.
But yeah, he treats everybody like shit the whole movie. I don't think he needs to be a likable character, though.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. And the fact that he is so unlikable and yet he is so just enigmatic and magnetic on screen, like, it's a testament to the character. It's a testament to his portrayal of it. Like, yeah.
Exactly.
I've seen way more characters supposed to be likable that I just fucking hated. This is just such a good example of like writing a character that you're not supposed to like and yet you want to see what's going to happen. You don't feel like ever you have to root for Sam in order to wonder where he's going, what he's doing, what's going to happen.
Yeah, in fact, I half the time I'm not rooting for him and or necessarily anybody, but at the same time, it's like it's not like I want him to lose. It's not like I'm actively like hating him. He's not a nice person. And if somebody else won, it would be very interesting and entertaining. But the way it happens is also interesting and entertaining. And I think that actually speaks to not only the writing, but to the acting and to the directing and to everything. Like, this is what you should be doing in your movies and with your characters.
Yeah, every character has very clearly delineated needs and wants. Like, you know what everyone is trying to do throughout the entire movie. And to do that in a way that doesn't feel heavy-handed or pandering or talking down to the audience, like, that's really skillful. And that's not something you see very often. And this movie is fucking 80 years old.
And most of the conversations are just people lying to each other. And then,
yeah, constantly.
Yeah.
You just find out, like, oh, I just watched that whole scene. None of that was true.
Yeah, it's all
bullshit. Oh my god, I was the second time I watched this, I watched it with someone who had the DVD, and I'm glad every time I watched it, I learned something new that I had missed before. But it was nice watching it with a person because I was like, wait, did he just say that? And then like we would have to like have go back and forth and be like, but that's not true, right? Like it was really nice to You're have that person to bounce it off work. Of.
Yeah. Taking notes and shit. wait, what?
Trying to follow everything that they were saying.
Yeah, I actually missed the... I had to go back and rewatch the middle bit again because at the end when Bridget is like, but I love you and all this shit, I'm like, wait, where's all this coming from?
Oh, yeah. There was a whole like buildup where they're both... You can see them both trying to manipulate the other one into thinking that they love each other. And Sam at least has had enough like winks at the camera with his little smiles and shit that you know that he's probably playing her. Figuring out that she was also trying to play him, I thought was really interesting because, like, even up to the very end, she's still like trying to throw this like,
"I love you, I love you."
Yeah, like using her feminine wiles kind of power and to like watch it not work on him is like really illuminating, Kristen, for you to say that this movie is very gay because it seems like he should have
right?
been convinced.
It makes sense.
But when you think about it, like he's like, yeah, no, I've. Whatever. Okay, well, cool.
No, because at one point she goes, well, if you can't take money, then you know what can I offer you? And he kisses her, you know. And then the next thing, like, you know, when they're waiting for that, there's a man outside like staking out their place. He goes in for a big kiss or whatever and sees him out the window. So that and then it cuts to the next morning, and he's coming down. So that says that, you know, they slept together, you know, in old movie speak.
Yeah, that's what I got from that as well.
Yeah.
I was confused by that because when he goes down for the kiss and he sees the man outside the window, he actually stops and there's no kiss. And I rewound it and watched it a couple of times to make sure. Yeah. And then I wasn't sure. Yeah, I got that they slept together, but I was like, was
they
that important? Was it important that he stopped the kiss? Was it important? Like, yeah. I wasn't sure exactly what was going on there.
He should have said, "Let's get away from the window, dear."
Well, I think what he was doing there was he was trying to keep her there to get questions answered, and he was using the guy outside of the window as like bullshit to keep her there, and didn't realize that the guy was actually still at the window. And then
he was like startled.
Well, I'm not startled, but you know, just being like, "Oh, that fucker actually is there," you know.
Yeah, okay, that's what I kind of decided was happening, was he was surprised that the guy was still there.
Yeah.
But then I didn't know if it was like some sort of like, I mean, it doesn't make sense compared for the rest of the movie, but like maybe it was like badly edited and like he was supposed to go in for the kiss. Because if you're not paying super close attention, you wouldn't necessarily notice that. He didn't go for the kiss, I mean.
Agreed. That poor fucking, what was that dude's name? What was the hitman's name or the guy with the two automatics? That was following Thorsby. Everybody, and was it Thorsby? Well, I forget.
I don't know. That's the only one whose name I remember. Thorsby and Gutman.
No, Thorsby was the. We don't even see
Wilmer?
Him on screen.
You're talking about Wilmer, the guy who.
Wilmer. Oh, Wilmer.
You're trying to make the
Wilmer.
Fall guy.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That poor motherfucker. You almost feel sorry for that guy if he didn't murder like everybody in the film.
Yeah, but doesn't he even kill Gutman, the fat man at the end? Did they say that?
No.
Did they say that?
No, the police come in and they said that they arrested everybody.
Oh, really? Okay. I thought he killed him because for like turning on him.
No.
He should have.
No, he was just threatening that in the room.
He was just mad for a bit, but, you know, they made up later.
On the way to find the real Falcon.
Mega. Yeah.
look at you pronouncing it right. Falcon.
The Millennium Falcon. I learned to say that word from Star Wars.
What did you think, Kristen, of these of the 40s attire?
It was amazing, wasn't it?
veils everywhere.
Oh yeah, I loved the veils. They're like a couple of furs. Oh my god, yeah. When she's wearing like the foxes and she has them all like biting each other, and like I know that was standard at the time, but like you just never see that really. I thought it looked really great. And then she has another really nice fur coat at the end. And of course, you don't, I mean, okay, we don't see this because of animal cruelty. Like, don't go by any, like, I'm not condoning this. But it still looked really nice. It looked beautiful. And even her pinstriped bathrobe, I was like, that looks so nice. And of course, all the men were wearing suits, which looked the only suit. that I didn't like, but I thought it suited his character, so it worked actually. I mean, I personally didn't like, was the trench coat.
Yeah, he felt too blocky, like it was too big on him.
Yeah, I think they did that on purpose, though, for the sake of when they pull it over him to restrain him. I think they needed it to be that big and bulky. Also, he's supposed to be, like, menacing. He's the bodyguard, kind of. And so I think, again, that's why they chose it. I think it works really well in this, but, yeah, I personally didn't like it.
Need to put William H. Macy in that role now.
Maybe, like, actually, 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
That's totally Fargo him in that character. Macy. Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, that would be good.
I like the women's hairstyles and stuff back then. Like that, like hard part with the waves, you know.
I was gonna say the hair also looked really nice. Looks really good. Their waves, their curls, their everything. It looked really, really great.
I was really surprised how short Mary Astor's hair was. Like,
yeah, yeah, it was very short.
Yeah, it kind of took me aback for a 40. So
no, when did women start cutting their hair? Was it the 20s?
20s. By this super tight.
Point Bob's. In time, a lot of women kept their hair short. It was unusual to have long hair by this time.
I remember a lot of them, like, didn't the secretary, she had, like, a longer hair, but she had it up so she could, like, wear her hats?
Yeah.
Right? That's what I mostly, like, I don't know, think of like, 40s women, you know.
Oh.
With, like,
if you Google, like, 40s, stuff. Like, hair tutorials, it's almost always for short hair.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Or at least the ones I see are, yeah. But yeah, the makeup also looked really great. I thought everything looked fantastic. And it was also such a huge difference in... Because I think I sent you guys the link. This is a public domain. It's on the Internet Archive if you want to watch this for free. But then watching it in the DVD, there was such a huge difference. And at first, I didn't think it would make that much of a difference because all of the comments... on the Internet Archive, we're talking about how they didn't care. But as soon as you watch it, like, properly, you're like, no, this looks so much better. But it also made, like, all of the costuming and all of the hair and all of the makeup and everything just, like, pop the way it should pop.
Yeah, compression quality makes a big fucking difference in the way that we distinguish contrast and sharpness and things like that. And in a black and white movie, when everything is texture and tone like that, it would absolutely make a huge difference. I think this movie just got a 4K release. Did you get that, Brian?
Yeah.
I watched the 4K stream of it. And there was like one rear projection scene when they're outside looking for the body.
Yeah, Archer's body's down below.
Yeah. Oof, that looks a little rough. But, you know, it still plays.
When he's like up on the top of the thing and there's building
like a
behind
hill,
him.
Yeah, and they're looking down, and when they're up, then you can see, you know, the city off in the distance.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to feel like there's like distance there, but it just feels flat, like there's a screen.
It does, yeah.
And then of course all the soft when you cut to like Mary Astor's face and it's just totally out of focus and soft, you know, all that stuff really.
Vaseline on the lens.
Yeah. But the grain feels really good. Like it's really, it just feels nice.
I didn't see anything out of focus. I mean, it was like soft close-ups, but they did at this time, but...
Yeah. It seemed like it was pushed a little heavy, but it was good, though. You know, it felt of the time.
Well, I mean, dude, it had to be. I mean, did you see, like, everybody had, like, I got it right now, but they got the smoker eyes. Everyone fucking had the goddamn bags under their eyes in this movie. I was like, holy shit, everyone actually is a real smoker.
Because I just thought they were, like, sleep-deprived because of all the murders.
Smoking gives you bags?
Yeah, dude. You didn't know that? Hmm. Yeah, like no. Go Google
look
search
at production stills real quick.
yeah, you can actually look at like they have like before and after, you know, like when people in their 20s and then people like 40 and 60 that have been smoking for like 20 years versus people that haven't. And yeah, you get like these you get bags under your eyes. Just like if you've been smoking for a long time, your fingertips on the hand that you smoke your cigarette with turn orange.
Yes, they tell you that in school to scare you. Yeah, I remember that one.
You want orange fingers, do you, kid?
No.
It's a real thing. From a smoker. Don't smoke, kids.
Unless you want to roll your own like Humphrey Bogart. Badass.
He does make it look so fucking cool. God damn it.
And the touch tip of fucking tabletop lighters are so fucking dope.
So sexy, dude. I want one. Yeah.
Makes me want to smoke inside. I'm like, God damn it. Look at that. Why did we ever go to Zippo's? Damn it. They were so cool.
This is classy.
And I like the different phones in this one, too. Like some of them are like the old two-hand, you know, phones. But then I noticed they also had like some rotary phones where they just pick them up with one hand.
Yeah.
I love seeing all
that stuff. Newfangled technology.
That's the one-handed phone right there.
These must be some rich folks.
Well, so with that, we're gonna take a break. We're going to play the trailer for John Huston's The Maltese Falcon. We'll be right back.
Come closer. I want to talk to you. I'm going to tell you an astounding story. The story of the Maltese Falcon. 600 years, the Falcon has carried the mystery of a fabulous wealth under its grotesque wings. I could tell you 1,000 tales of the men and women who have hunted this evil bird. But every story has the same ending. Murder. Listen to these incredible people, all consumed by their passionate greed for the Maltese Falcon.
What have you ever given me beside money? Have you ever given me any of your confidence, any of the truth? Haven't you tried to buy my loyalty with money and nothing else?
What else is there I can buy you with?
Who? I won't play the sap for you.
I haven't lived a good life. I've been bad. Worse than you could know.
We were talking about a lot more money than this.
There are more of us to be taken care of now.
Well, that may be, but I've got the Falcon.
You may have the Falcon. We certainly have you.
I've taken a lot of riding from you. I'm going to take. Get up and shoot it out.
Stop it. The police will be here any minute. Now talk.
Oh, how can you accuse me of such a terror?
This isn't the time for that schoolgirl act. We're both of us sitting under the gallows.
That was a great fucking trailer.
That was a fucking great trailer.
That was an amazing trailer. What the fuck?
That tells the story. The other one is selling the people.
Yeah, but it that's not representative of what the film is. That's not. Yeah, it's all different sound effects. All the sounds have been completely replaced except for the dialogue. That doesn't give you any fucking feel or tone for that movie.
It doesn't give you a sense of tone, but it does give you a sense of the story and the actual like intensity of it.
You think the other one shows tone? Of that?
No. If I watched the newer trailer and then watched the movie, I would be very upset.
You talking about the first trailer?
No, the second trailer. If I watched the second trailer and then watched the movie, I would be upset.
Because it tells the whole movie?
No, because the tone is totally different. It's a good trailer, but it's not. I don't think it's representative of the movie.
That's a good point.
And obviously we're back, and that was one of the trailers for the Maltese Falcon. I don't know which one we're going to play. I say we play the old one. But I may be overruled.
No. That one was interesting. I like an old trailer because they try to sell you the movie, you know?
You could play the old one underneath the new one, and then you'd at least have dialogue.
I mean, the problem with the older trailer is that it makes a lot of references that we don't understand.
Well, it's also like this is a romance movie. Like that's all it is, you know.
Did you guys notice as soon as we did the new one and it has the guy with the cane on his mouth, like it's very like
at one point in his over the shoulder, he's like it's in his mouth.
Yeah. See? Yeah. Like
yeah. He's like I'll do whatever I have to get this fucking Falcon, bro.
That was a Warner Brothers studio note. Peter Lorre is, what is the word they use? Is pansy. Can we make him less pansy?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go. He did have scented business cards. I think that's classy.
That's amazing.
And I guess a scented handkerchief as well. Is that something people did back in the day? I don't know.
Of course. What do you mean? Yeah, of course. Yes.
Well, you spray your little cologne or perfume on it, and so when you wave it, you know, it's good.
Well, you can also like give it, you know, you give your handkerchief as like a favor to somebody, and then they can smell you also.
Oh, it smells
They've been
like
doing
her.
That for like hundreds of years.
You get one of those after the favor happens.
No, it's like oh, I'm sorry, I blew my nose on this. You. Take this.
Oh, well, you clean up the favor after it happens.
This is covered in their boogers and cum.
I don't think that's what they use
favors.
Either way, I did like both those trailers. It does make me want to watch a movie again.
Yeah.
Yeah, for reals. Yeah.
Yeah, it did. It also reminded me of the scene, which I thought was so funny, where you leave Cairo and the lady alone in the room and you come back and he is like all bloodied and they're trying to figure out what happened and she calls him a liar and she walks over and kicks him. I thought it was so funny. It was so ridiculous.
Well, I thought that lie that fucking Bogart throws out was like, oh, we're just kidding you. I'm like, dude. That is fucking weak sauce, and I do like how they bring that up later. It's like, I felt so stupid repeating that lie over and over again. I was like, all right, good. I'm glad you guys caught it out, too. That is thin.
Well, at the end, when he starts calling him an imbecile, that's when you really hear where Ren from Ren and Stimpy comes from.
I wondered why that sounded so familiar. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You idiot! Yeah. You idiot! You imbecile!
Yeah.
No, yeah, you can definitely hear it.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, the whole time I was like, I know that voice.
Definitely has a look about him, that's for sure.
Man, the first time I remember him is in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie since I was like 12, but that dude like lives in my brain somehow, apparently. I was like, holy shit, it's this guy.
I've marked down M. I've never seen that, but I've heard of it, so I'll definitely be checking that out.
Oh, yeah. Is
he the lead?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the villain of the... Well, I guess he's the protagonist and antagonist, kind of. That's a weird movie.
Anti-hero protagonist?
Yeah, because, you know, he is a serial killer, killing people, little girls. So
they
like
say that this
creepy.
Movie is it leans real heavy on the, you know, the quintessential anti-hero film.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy
that. Is
he
an anti-hero? Like it feels like he's not really a bad guy. I mean,
but you don't know that until the very end.
Is he an anti-hero because he's just an asshole?
Because it feels like he's like living under the law, you know. He's doing bad things. So
stay out of my way.
Yeah,
that's the only way I'm going to solve this case is if you stay far away from me.
That's why he can't be a cop, because you know he needs to still break the law to solve the, you know. he makes murder his business or whatever.
I think to be a hero, there's you know, at least in, you know, I think there's some level of likability there.
I don't know. I like him when even when he's being a jerk. Like, I don't know. You always get the sense that people are always lying to him, so he's always trying to get the truth. So I feel like that's acceptable. And then the other times, I don't know. He's always winking and smiling at the camera and putting a show on, and then like leaving and being like, "Yeah, this idiot,
got him."
They have no idea what I'm thinking, and he's lying to find out the truth. So I don't know. And then like, once he returns the money, you know, at the end, it's just like, well, he didn't really get anything out of it except for maybe, he got 200 from when the lady came in.
Yeah, he got from the beginning.
He got another 200 from Peter Lorre.
He got 100, and the other guy took 100, so he only made 100 bucks. They split it.
Yeah, but between the girl and Peter Lorre's character that come into his office, he's got 400 right there.
Yeah, man.
I don't know what that is in 1941, but that's got to pay rent for a couple months. I don't know, San Francisco.
He's got a nice office, too.
Yeah. With some really good lighting to show some his
real crisp shadows,
yeah. Dude.
He's got a gobo, like he's got a really nice like light in the corner that's casting his like logo on the ground when you come in. You know, that was cutting edge back then.
I love that fucking dolly push into it, like just go straight on.
Oh yeah,
and the fact that you can read it where it should be inverted and backwards.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Let's not process that.
That's
at
what
all.
I'm saying. Like, no. He actually has a light in the corner that's making that. Like that's part of this.
No, wait a minute. Style. If you had it on our side, it would be inverted. But if you had a light shining through, right, it would show on the floor and you'd be able to read it, right?
Oh, if it's facing outwards.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So $400 in 1941 is $8,558.
Fuck me.
That's that'll
pay
a
good week
for
bro.
A month.
Yeah. For a month.
So shit, when they're offering like $5,000, that's a lot of money. You know, that's killer money, bro. Throwing a lot of money around.
I don't have to kill anyone or rob anything, do I?
Okay, so $5,000 is essentially $107,000.
Holy shit.
That's like
wow, that
a quarter of a cap of a house.
Yeah. Well, you can get a house for $100,000, bro.
No, you can't.
Not now. Maybe before 2020. Not after. Fuck. All right. Okay, so I got to ask. When they were offering, like saying that the Falcon could fetch $250,000.
Type it in, Kristen.
I don't even want to know.
It's a lot.
Quarter of a million is going to be like 50.
5.3 million.
Holy shit.
That's a lot of dough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm coming at that.
I'd probably
shoot. Like, they keep saying that it was jewel encrusted, but it's smooth.
Well, they put that stuff on top of it, Jared.
They put lacquer on it, whatever.
It was a fake one, okay? They don't know what the real one looks like. They've never seen it. Maybe it was like, you know, it's eyeballs or like rubies or some shit like that. You know what I mean?
That would be sick. Yeah, yeah.
Or like the feathers, like got some emeralds in it or something. I don't know. You know?
It looks like Bobo or Bobo. Fucking Clash of the Titans. That fucking like.
Oh my God. Fuck you. Fucking stupid ass owl.
It's an owl. Yeah. But he's got little like jewels for eyes and shit. It would look just like that. Yeah.
Thank you for ruining
the base
that
it's on. Maybe the base that it's on is actually like a jewel encrusted crown type style thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there you go. It would have been cool if they actually had gotten the real one. Ending wouldn't have the impact, but you know, I would have liked to have seen it.
Wait, you mean the movie didn't get the real one for the prop, or in the movie they still got a fake one?
Oh, they pull a Hateful Eight. They're actually using the real one. You know,
I don't think there is a real Maltese Falcon. I think that's a made up thing, right?
It has to be.
I assumed it was. I didn't even look it up.
I'm looking it up right now. Hold on.
It's got to be fake. There is no
way. That's the next Indiana Jones movie where they bring him back to actually find the.
But it's Indiana no. I think it's Jones based on. It is. Isn't Maltese it based falcon. On something?
I mean, I'm sure it's based on something, but it's definitely. It's not a falcon. Falcon.
Falcon.
Falcon.
You're a
Indiana
liar.
Indiana Jones are pronounced falcon.
Yeah.
It belongs in a museum.
Okay, so oh no, sorry. I was gonna describe it, but that's what the film version is. Never mind. And so yeah, so it is gold and encrusted with jewels, but it has been covered in black enamel to disguise its value.
We need to find the falcon.
No, this one goes there. That one goes there.
They just bring it up and they look at each other and go, "Chewie, we're home."
So what was the budget on this one? Did we even have numbers for such things?
It's somewhere between $350,000 to $400,000.
Wow. Damn. It's a good budget.
Made 1.6 to 1.8 in its original run.
Wow. It was a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It boosted his career. It like, you know, this is the solidifying thing for the bogey.
Catapulted is the word they use on the internet.
Yes. Catapulted. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like, I don't know, this launched everyone's, well, I guess not everybody, but it definitely launched Bogart and John Huston. This was his first, this was his directorial debut, so.
Yeah.
That's super impressive. Strong. And that guy.
What was John Huston do? What was he big for?
Oh, shit, dude, the African
actor,
Queen.
Bro.
Oh, okay, he directed that?
Yeah. Oh, shit, man. He's directed, I mean, he even made movies all the way up into the 80s. That Jack Nicholson, Angelica Huston movie he made with his daughter, what was that called? Prezi's Honor.
Prezi's Honor?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
he is a prolific fellow.
He did a bunch of Bogart films. Treasure of the Sierra Madre was one. That is super fucking good. He's done a bunch. I'm blinking on what the other ones are.
Oh, he did the original Casino Royale.
Yeah, well, that was a bunch of directors that worked on that. There was like four or five because there's a bunch of people that are playing James Bond. There's not just one James Bond in that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The Unforgiven. Moby Dick.
Oh, yeah. He did the Gregory Peck Moby Dick. But that guy is, oh, my God. The stories of John Huston are fucking classic. Like, okay, so he starts off in Hollywood in the silent era, right, as an actor. Okay. Then he transitions to screenwriting. And why does he transition to screenwriting? Because he killed a lady while he was drunk driving and somehow didn't go to jail for that.
Very Hollywood.
It was very common.
What?
Back then.
So yeah, it fucking murder, like hit a lady with his car, like some Bolivian dancer that was actually married to maybe she was Brazilian, but she was like dating or married to some Brazilian director.
Wow.
And he kills her, right? And then, you know, goes from acting to screenwriting. And he starts writing scripts. He catches Howard Hawks' attention. And then he's like, hey, I would like to direct. And there's stories. Like, he's credited with the screenplay. But, you know, there's this Hollywood legend around this film that, like, he literally told his secretary, put the book in script form. And when Jack Warner from Warner Brothers was in his office, he picked the script up and greenlit that script. So technically, if you want to believe that story, he didn't even write the script. His secretary did, following his direction.
Wow.
Very Hollywood.
Yeah. And there's so many great stories with him. Like, he got in a very famous fight with Errol Flynn, where they were, like, boxing each other in front of David Oshelznick's driveway, I believe, in the front yard. Broke a couple of ribs on Errol Flynn. He got his nose broken. Broke a bunch of bones in his elbow. Gave him problems for the rest of his life.
Wow. What did they do that brought them to such blows?
They were arguing over some actress.
Classic.
Classic Hollywood.
Yeah. No, John Huston is, his biography is fucking amazing. It's just full of, like, womenizing and a lot of fucking drinking and a lot of fucking shooting animals out in Africa.
Wow.
If you've ever seen that movie, the Clint Eastwood movie, White Hunter, Black Heart, that's kind of like a biography of the making of the African Queen.
Wow.
And John Huston really, he wanted to make that movie just so he could go safari hunting.
What was the Clint Eastwood movie?
White Hunter, Black Heart.
I'm going to mark that one down.
It's a hard one to find. I think it only came out on DVD. I don't think they've ever put that out on Blu-ray. Hmm. Well, if they have, I don't have it.
1990. And you can rent it for $3.59 on Prime, bro.
It's got a young Jeff Fahey in it, too, looking sexy. We just saw him in Horizon.
Burt Kennedy, James Bridges, written by. Yeah, dude. Cool. Thanks for the recommend.
So the Maltese Falcon is apparently based on the Niphausen Hawk, which is a ceremonial pouring vessel made in 1697 for George Wilhelm von Niphausen, Count of the Holy Roman Empire. It's modeled after a hawk perched on a rock and is encrusted with red garnets, amethysts, emeralds, and sapphires.
That's awesome.
It is currently owned by the Cavendish family and is part of the Chatsworth House.
Wait, it's like a cup?
No, it is a it's a hawk that's made out of, it's got fucking rubies all over it and shit.
It's a pouring vessel, okay.
What the fuck is a pouring vessel?
It looks like a statue, Kristen.
A pouring vessel makes it sound like it's a gauntlet or like a I don't know. A goblet.
A goblet.
There we go.
I think you
Thank
pour
you,
your
sorry.
Soul into it as you pray.
It's the thing fucking Harry Potter wins at the end of whatever the Wizarding tournament, you know?
Goblet of Fire.
The gauntlet? The Goblet of Fire.
I don't know. I'm not a fucking... You guys know. You tell me.
Oh, wow. So, I don't see where you would pour from this. It does look... Interesting.
1697. Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool.
Hold on.
See, but this one makes sense because it's actually covered in jewels and shit. It looks like the way they describe it in the movie.
Yeah, it does look like the way
like
they
this looks like,
it.
Yeah, when they describe what the Maltese Falcon is, this is it.
You can tell that the props department was pressed for time.
Holy shit, there's like actual wings spread out. It's not like one little small thing.
Yeah, it looks great.
That's so many jewels.
Oh, wait, it looks kind of like, I think the top part, I wonder if the top part lifts off because it looks like there's...
And you pour blood out of it, yeah.
I mean, you could. It says it's ceremonial, so I don't
know.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah, they fill
they
this
put it
of,
in the
like,
freezer and all the jewels get cold and then they do vodka shots off of it.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
I don't know. That looks a little tacky.
We call that
gaudy.
A Kipphausen. Niphausen.
It is very gaudy.
Yeah, that's what you do when you have money, Brian.
Yeah.
God.
You gotta put your money in something.
Apparently, it's when it, if you go see it on display, there's a mirror so you can see like front and back, because there's like even more jewels and everything across its back.
Yeah, man, I can appreciate that. That looks awesome.
They can take it out of the case and, you know, let me get a hands-on demonstration and weigh it.
You'd be fucking trying to pick fucking...
Like, just burn away real quick.
Look at this dude. I think he's the owner.
Look at my
clothes. Oh, wait, that old man is holding it? Oh, I thought it'd be heavier than that. Oh, disappointed.
I like how the Falcon in the movie, you know, it's like heavy. They're like, ugh. It's like this giant block of lead, you know?
Yeah.
That's what hopes and dreams are made of.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
What is that from? It's from a Shakespeare play.
It is heavy. It says that it's 45 pounds, and it was sold at auction for $4 million.
Picking that up?
No, the prop.
Oh.
Bro, 45 pounds isn't that bad?
I know. I thought she was talking about the actual... I mean, still, probably, 45 pounds for like that old dude that she sent that phone? No, come on. Some 80-year-old dude.
No, it probably weighs
camp.
More. If it's made out of like real jewels and everything, it probably...
Are you talking about the prop is 45 pounds?
The prop
or this?
Is 45 pounds.
Yeah, the prop is 45
Holy fuck,
pounds.
That's heavy.
That's why they were struggling with it the whole movie.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, try carrying that around and holding
after
it
smoothly.
After you've
been shot. Like, that guy gets shot and runs upstairs and shit into this building and is like, ah! And he fucking dies.
That's why. He should have stashed it somewhere.
He's like, fuck. He's like, he should have been like, it's downstairs. Fuck me.
I do like in old movies when people die. It's always like, it's so exaggerated.
And then the woman starts, screaming. It's just like, is he? You know, like, come on, man.
Okay, she did have that really, that scream on command was that I was kind of impressed by that.
She instant hysterical scream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, he must be dead because she's screaming.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise you wouldn't know and you'd have to like call the paramedics and wait and like, screaming is just better. Come on.
Didn't anyone scream? Well, we could have saved all this trouble.
And you know Humphrey Bogart really cared about her because he didn't smack her and tell her to stop freaking out. Woman, get a hold of yourself. Psh, psh, let me smack you across the face. Calm you down.
What did he say? Like, take my slaps?
What did he tell? Pitt, what did he say? When you're slapped, you'll take it and like it.
Yeah.
Gay.
Yes. Dairy Queen.
My favorite line of the whole thing is when he tells Mary Astor, "You are a liar." She goes, "I am. I always have been a liar." And he goes, "Don't brag about it." That is so fucking great.
It's great.
It was great, but when she was like, "If I've only lied, it's the way." What did she say? I've been to write it down, but. You know, I haven't told a lie. If there was any lie, it's the way I've delivered it. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, that's so smart. I need to start saying that.
It's just my delivery.
It's just the way I told it. That's all. It's still true. It's true, I swear.
I only sound guilty. No, the dialogue. I do like how fast the dialogue is. And
it's really fast.
Okay, when he has that scene and he's like, he's talking super, super fast, and then he turns to the transcriber and he's like, "Did you get all that?" And he's like, but the transcriber is just like, "Yeah."
Like, this is my job.
Like, yeah,
this
good.
Is literally my job.
They're writing in Morse code just to keep up. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, the way transcribers used to write is really cool. I don't know if you guys have seen that. I mean,
it's like dashes. It is like it's like really shorthand.
Yeah, it's like it's just symbols. It's just scribbles. Yeah.
Wait, what? For real?
Yeah.
Then they have to go back and like decode it.
Yeah, they used to have a code so they could get everything that the people said.
Dear God, I would rather just say, "Oh, hold on, let me finish writing this down."
Oh, that is why you don't get paid for that.
What does star question mark exclamation point mean? Oh, fuck, I forgot.
They have a transcriber like typewriter too that you can like do it quicker, you know, but it's still coded like that.
Oh, okay, so you know where all the letters and everything are. It's just, okay, all right, that makes sense.
You don't have to lift your hands. Your hands are just sitting on it, you know.
Obviously, I've never had that job because I suck at typing.
Yeah, the fast dialogue felt like almost modern in a sense. Like I don't think I've seen a movie this
old.
It's
like you're watching Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like this is what she wants it to be when she writes all that fucking dialogue and tells everybody to just deliver it over each other. But like this is how it needs to be.
Yeah, it was interesting because after watching this movie, I watched Marlowe, which is some film noir, modern film noir.
Oh, with Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
That's fucking terrible.
I didn't finish
it. Oh, was it?
Don't spoil it for me. I'm halfway through
I didn't
through
finish it
it's
either.
Okay.
I turned it off after 35 minutes. It's not going
oh, okay.
Damn.
But I was going to say,
you
though.
You didn't finish it. It's
bad. Whole,
yeah, okay. So then maybe I won't finish it. But
I mean, maybe it gets better in the last 40.
But the whole time I was watching it, I was like, this would be so much better if it was in black and white and the delivery was faster. Like, they're not, like, they're trying so hard to evoke the same spirit but do it modern, and, like, it's not working.
Hmm. Liam Neeson's fucking terrible and just miscast. Just so miscast.
It's a recent film?
Yeah, it's like 2 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. It's very recent.
Yeah, I think it was on Amazon Prime not long ago.
It still is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, it's not good. And the lighting is...
not good.
It's so terrible. Oh, my God. It almost looks like a 90s high-key comedy.
Mm. Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at everything. It's like front-lit.
But it's not that. It's not like funny. I thought Maltese Falcon was way funnier.
It actually does have nice, like, funny moments.
There were so many moments where I actually laughed out loud. And it's also somehow very suspenseful. Even like at some point, I'm like, wait, what are we doing? Why do we care about this? What's going on? But I'm still like, it's still suspenseful. Like, I still want it to go the way it's supposed to go. I still want, I don't know. But it's funny because I'm not really rooting for anybody. But like, and maybe that also adds to the suspense because there's stakes for everybody.
Yes.
Everybody has very high stakes, even the widow. I think maybe the secretary is the only person who doesn't have a super serious like investment in this, except she's still harboring one of them. Like, she's also like, something could happen to her. Like, it's just great the way they did it. It's very intense to watch.
I like how they give her funny. Yeah, I like how they give her secretary, like when she goes and picks up the widow, like, she has like learned a little bit of the detective business, and she's like, you know, her bed was roughed up, but you could tell the sheets weren't pushed down, like she actually slept in them, and it's like, shit, look at this girl. And even Sam Spade's like, that's right,
it's like,
took
fuck you,
you
get that girl. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great little moment.
She's not just like, you know, a dame, you know, she's actually contributing stuff to the story.
Well, I mean, I think the interesting thing about women, especially in older movies and especially in film noir, is that none of them are just there because they need like someone to look at because they're dating somebody on screen. They all have a role and they're all human. Like, again, the widow is having an affair. You know, the lead, Mary Astor, in this lies constantly. You have no idea what she's doing at any point in time. The secretary is, yes, intelligent and bringing him back information. And I think that's one of the reasons that so many people, especially women, like older movies.
Hmm.
I don't know when we lost that, but it's great.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I was just thinking that, like, that was one of the things I was most surprised about this, was the complexity of the female characters, because they all, like you're saying, they all have depth and intrigue to them, and we feel their stakes just like the men, and it never once feels like they're there just to serve the man, like just to give them something to do, and it's like, I was, like, yeah, surprised. Like,
no, it was... I think is really surprising is how they're all like that. Like, I went through like a 40s kick a few months ago, and I just started picking them at random because I don't really know that much about 40s films. And every single one has really great characters. Even if you don't like the movie, like, you're still like, oh, but this is really well written, actually. And the characters are kind of great.
Wow. We definitely lost something along the way.
Yeah.
The scripts are definitely better. Yeah, which makes everything kind of better.
It does. And I was going to say, even if you don't like it, but actually I can't think of one that I was like, no, that's a bad movie, I wouldn't recommend it. Like, I would recommend all of them maybe at different points, but like, they all had something to offer.
Hmm. Well, I think that's what's interesting about stuff from this time period is that, like, if the script is good, the movie's going to fucking hold up 80 years later. Like, there's not enough, like, technological revolution at this point in time where they're, like, trying to do, like, cheesy effects that, like, it's not like King Kong where you're like, oh, wow, look at this puppet or animation type thing.
Shut
like,
your mouth, Griggs.
I'm just saying, like, there are things that are trying to push technology, and then there are movies that are just, like, really fucking tight stories that are using all of the basic technology of lights and a lens that we still have today, that, like, you could shoot the exact same movie with the exact same script today and it would still be an amazing fucking movie because of the script and because of the way those directors are interpreting through all of the actors that are on screen. And that's I think maybe why there's a classic traditional Hollywood legendary thing, like, because they had a great time of scripts.
Yeah.
A great director can make a terrible film out of a great script, but a great director cannot make a good film out of a terrible script.
Also too, like, I don't know, Hollywood opening up to like when World War II starts happening and we just get all this, and we got all these foreign voices, people outside of the United States coming and working in Hollywood and telling their stories. I do feel like that just makes things better.
Oh, absolutely. And more interesting. Yeah. Any amount of diversity in the voices that are speaking is beneficial for everyone, for sure.
It just, yeah, it's just a crazy time, but just so many fucking talented people, man.
So I had one question about the camera in this. There was, I feel like for most part it was shot like very normally, but there was like a scene where Spade and Guttman were talking, and every time they showed Guttman, they showed it, the camera like tilted up towards him. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, is this just because you want to see his gut? Like,
he's the fat man. We keep saying the fat man.
Well, I know.
Wanted to look really big in the frame, but he's also, we're looking up to him because
that's what I, yeah, that's what I kind of was saying.
Yeah. I read it definitely as trying to make him feel larger than life.
That's what I
thought.
But
also,
okay.
They kind of employed that sort of perspective on all of the villains. Like, most of the shots of them are from significantly lower than their eye line. And when you're on Sam's
ceiling a lot.
Yeah.
Shots, yeah.
But most of the time when we're on Sam Spade, it's kind of more from like his eye line perspective. So there's this sort of juxtaposition between the way that we are looking at him in close-ups and the way that we're looking at these quote-unquote villains in close-ups. But also they play a lot of these scenes in like three and four shots. Like, it's kind of impressive how much it's just like wide master things that happen, and then they go in for like coverage as the scene is progressing. Like, it's really well cut too. I was impressed.
Well, cameras were so big back then, and so when you moved the camera, it needed to be for a fucking reason, right?
Good fucking reasons,
you know?
Yeah.
And so they play them out like a play a lot, you know, and then you punch in when you have to. So it's kind of a masterclass in getting proper coverage, you know, with minimal stuff.
With a lot of fucking dialogue. That, like, this is fast-paced dialogue, and there's a lot of exposition happening, and there's not a lot of, like, moving from place to place or moving even around the scenes. Like, they kind of land in their blocking, and then they hang out there for a minute, and then there's another reason to move, and then land in another blocking and like hang out for a while. Like, these are not super complicated setups, but they're all so captivating and interesting.
I do like how the fat man's like almost always sitting in every scene. Like, when he gets up, it's like, oh, that's a big thing.
Oh yeah, when he prances out at the end, it's like,
it carries weight. It's like, oh wait, you're just letting him get away? Oh my god, you know, it adds a lot. That's very smart. I like how Peter Lorre's like always like hunched over him at the end, like in that final act when they're in Sam Spade's apartment. And he's just like, "Lorre." Well, fuck. I'm sorry.
He's like dancing the gun around his hands and like just kind of like fiddling with it.
That's good stuff. But she's lying. Everybody's always fiddling with cigarettes
Everybody has something to do, and that's one of the things that I think maybe gets lost in some of the modern things is like, actors can sometimes stand there looking for something to do or feeling like they're waiting for the next line. Everybody in this just feels like they're just existing and like actually having a conversation, which I don't know. Maybe I've done a lot of independent amateur short films, but like that's one of the struggles for like newcomers that have never acted or haven't really done much is they're just like, what am I supposed to do when I'm not like delivering a line? You're supposed to be a fucking person. Like, these guys are all just people.
React when they say something like you're hearing it for the first time. Pretend. You wouldn't think it's that hard, but goddamn.
Kids these days get in their heads.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think it's also, too, like a lot of these actors from this time period are also like almost everybody is like mixing stage and.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely like muscle memories that you learn as a stage actor. Of like how to be present on stage without looking like you're like trying to call attention to yourself if you're not actually doing something.
And maybe that's something that gets lost in screen acting and without ever going that direction.
That makes sense.
But there's also a subtlety too to, you know, screen acting that many stage actors don't ever quite unlock.
And you know, the acting in this movie is pretty bombastic. I mean, it's over the top. Would this kind of style of acting, would this fly today, or would people just be like, "Oh, you're fucking shit, man"?
It would be a caricature of this.
Yeah.
You would be, well, kind of like that movie you were just talking about, Liam Neeson. You know, maybe it just doesn't work.
Well, that's because it's boring.
If they had over the top acting, it'd make it way more interesting.
Yeah, that would help. That, yeah, that movie's God, dolls.
Oh, like Mark Ruffalo and fucking and Poor Things, like that. Yeah. over the top.
Oh, that,
like,
was great.
He's playing that vibe, but he's over the top. You know,
he did great. I love that.
That's a really good example, because like that felt like an earned character. Like that wasn't like a caricature of something. That was him.
But
being
he felt
bombastic.
Like he was of that era, of that vibe, yeah, that we think of from that era.
Yeah,
he was just like a.
We need to bring this back, man. Mark Ruffalo, lead us on. Yeah, you're right.
Okay,
no, yeah,
we should remake this with Ruffalo. Okay,
we've solved the problem in Hollywood.
It's time for another remake.
Yeah, it's been a long
the Maltese time. Ruffalo.
It's just a little statue of Mark Ruffalo.
Hey, he gets big in one movie, and this one he gets little. You know, it works out.
Oh yeah, you're right. We would probably have to have a statue of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
It's just a Hulk hand that's wrapped up in the paper.
Oh, it's like a fucking gauntlet.
Yeah, the little stuffed gauntlet, yeah, glove things.
Whatever, they'd have to look at it on their phone.
Someone just texted me this NFT.
It's Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk giving us the finger. It's worth a fortune.
The foam finger.
Oh, I did want to say, like, for this budget and this time, I did think the ship on fire scene was,
oh man,
oh, yeah, yeah,
spectacular.
Yeah,
yeah,
yes,
yeah,
yes.
And they had that wide shot of the ship, like fucking, like, capsized a little bit.
I think that was stock footage.
It was silhouette. You know, I was like, "Oh, that looks good."
I'm pretty sure that must have been stock footage, because the ship was in the wrong spot and it wasn't.
It was
close to
it.
A dock.
Wasn't capsized exactly like that. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. When they cut into the set, but
oh, yeah, first time I saw it, I didn't think anything of it. But man, it looks so good. Like those fucking fire bars on the like behind the windows are
in the
so
windows.
Yeah,
yeah,
cool,
yeah,
man.
I assure you, sir, everyone got out.
And it's like, what? It's like two shots there and they're out, you know? And it's just oh my God. Yeah.
And it's just so nonchalant. Like he's just walking. This is another day on the job. I'm like, all right, cool. See you later. Good luck with that.
Yeah, fuck, man. Ships burn down all the time. Oh, he got lazy with his matches.
You saw that desk lighter, right? I mean,
yeah,
it was bound to
anything
happen.
Sparks up instantly. Yeah. Matches were hardcore back then.
Yeah, you could like strike them on your friend's face
you
and like
barely touch it. That's definitely the matches you make fucking meth out of.
Couldn't get a Zippo, but I got this great lighter from this antique shop down the road. Oh my gosh. Oh, are we at ratings, or does anybody have anything else?
I think we've accomplished what we've set out to do.
All right. Who's rating the Maltese Falcon first?
I'm going to let you guys finish, but you got to say it's a 10 because it's a tentpole fucking goddamn film of this genre. When you think of noir films, this is probably what most people will go to. Can anyone else besides Brian name a noir?
Oh, that's a shame.
That's what I thought.
That's a shame.
So, but no, that's what's exciting about this month, and I'm glad we're starting with this one. You know, like that's good. It's the one we think of. It's the one that fucking Bugs Bunny references. So yeah, I'm excited to get into more noir.
I think Bugs Bunny is actually referencing Casablanca.
He's wearing the same fucking hat, bro, and he rolls up a cigarette.
I'm pretty sure the outfit he's wearing is because. That hat is very similar to Casablanca hat, and he also wears a trench coat in that. I'm almost 100% sure. Almost. Like, I would say 99.8.
Does he have a trench coat in this? Because he definitely has a trench coat in Casablanca.
I mean, I will say it's similar looks, but it's just...
Bugs Bunny, Private Eye.
It's...
He's playing a private eye, bro.
It's just, you know, it's... Yeah, sweetheart. You know, it's just a little bit more...
Animated because he's a fucking...
No, I mean, I don't know.
He's a
Humphrey
rabbit.
Bogart doesn't lead into the, yeah, she here, kid, quite like he does in Casablanca. You know, he didn't have that, like, that 40s vernacular dialect. You know what I'm talking about. Everyone in the 40s got to talk like this, see? Because this is how we talk. This is the cool way to do it.
Jared, are you done? Was that your...
Oh, name? Yeah. Somebody else jump in. That was fine.
Wait, we're ending on Bugs Bunny?
I said it's fucking tent pole of all fucking noir, bro. It's a 10. All
right, fair enough. Fair enough, fair enough. Who's going next?
I'll go next. Man, part of me like wants to give this like a 9 or 9.5 just because like a 10 feels like a perfect movie, but like I don't know what to dock this movie for. Like, I think the characterizations are really interesting. I fucking love all the camera work. Like every time we like smash dolly zoom into something to like just get a fucking close up after we've shot a master and that same thing for 3 minutes. Like I fucking love all those moments. There's a couple things that feel of the 40s time, where there, it feels more like a set than in like an actual location, but like I don't, that doesn't bother me at all in anything in this movie. I love the rapid fire dialogue. This feels like a fucking masterclass in how to do that. Every single shot has like perfectly blocked actors. Like you can see them all in great spaces on the screen. You know where everybody's at geographically, and nobody feels like they're placed. Everybody just feels like they just happened to land there. All the two-hander conversations where like we're getting these interesting perspectives and like looking up at the bad guys and looking down at the bad guys trying to be big. Man, I love all that shit. I don't think there's anything I can say is wrong with this movie. It was really interesting. I did get a little bit... It was a little bit slow towards the end of Act 2, but I may have just felt tired when I was watching it. I fucking loved it. It's a 10. I'm glad I finally got around to watching it after having so many movies reference this throughout my childhood, throughout my life that I've seen. This is a quintessential movie, and it fucking holds up. For 80 years later, this is a great movie. It's a 10.
Mm, you're here. I agree with Act 2. I had to watch that one twice, that section.
Wait, Act 2? I thought he said Act 3.
He said
no, towards the end of Act 2.
Yeah.
Oh, towards the end of Act... Wait,
like,
right,
yeah,
before
like,
the ship
like the middle.
In?
Yeah. By
yes,
the time that that's happening, it's picking back up and it's moving really well.
It took me 2 days to watch this movie and I stopped it literally on the scene break for going to the ship. Because like at that point I was like, oh my god, all right, it's too late. I need to go to sleep. I'm tired, whatever.
It's all
and then
this stuff.
Picking it up from there, it was like, fuck yes, man. Oh, this is so maybe if I had a little bit more energy to just push through and get into it, like it would have been a perfect watch in one setting. But yeah, it was just a little bit slow, dragging at that point. That's the only thing I can say was wrong with it.
Kristen, you wanna go next? You wanna go last?
Yeah, you can go next. Yeah, this is a great movie. I thought a lot about like what I could criticize it for, and it's unfortunate that I couldn't really come up with anything. So I guess I have to give it a 10. It's great.
You know, we'll take it. But that's it. That's all. That's it, Kristen.
What do you want me to say? It's a good movie. Yeah, I already said all the reasons I liked it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
God.
All right. I mean, yes. Obviously, this is a 10. Guys, I do not think this is slow in the slightest. In fact, I am, considering how many locations we have, and it's really just people's apartments and a lobby, and Humphrey Bogart's on screen, I think, for every fucking scene except for Archer dying, his partner. I think that's the only scene in the entire movie where he's, like, at least doesn't show up at the beginning or the end of a scene. Man,
that's true.
That's really hard to do. And like we keep going to these same apartments over and over again. I love the third act all taking place in Sam Spade's apartment. That is so fucking awesome. I love that his bed is out by those two fucking goddamn chairs. Oh, it's so fucking... He's such a bachelor with those draw doors right beneath his door. Oh, it's so fucking... It's such a cool set design. I think this thing flows, man. I never get bored watching it. It's one of those movies... even if I'm like, you know, I'm not in the mood to watch it, when I put it on, man, fucking 5-10 minutes in, I'm like, oh, yes, we're going to watch this whole fucking thing right now. It's just so good. It's just so well done. I love Humphrey Bogart. I love Mary Astor. I thought she is great. Peter Lorre stands out, and Sydney Greenstreet. They're just fantastic performances. They all work together. I mean, you can see why Sydney Greenstreet, Peter Lorre, Humphrey Bogart, I don't know how many movies they were in together, but they were definitely in Casablanca, Passage to Marseille. I can't even remember all the rest. These were like stock Warner Brothers players that like the studio was like, obviously, these guys work together. Well, they have good chemistry. And they just packaged them over and over again in these movies. And it just, you can see it. Like when you watch this film, you're like, if I was a studio executive, I'd be like, yes, I want these people in this movie. And I want them to play these parts. Humphrey Bogart's going to be the tough, cool hero. And then, you know, Sydney Greenstreet will be our sleazy but still sophisticated man. Peter Lorre is just going to be a creep. And a liar, of course, because he's got those shifty eyes. His eyes are so big, and, you know, he's just, and when he looks around, oh, yeah. Man, it's just, it's so good. It does, I guess, like, if you watch it in a modern day, I can see people's complaints of, like, you know, like, this doesn't feel original to me because it's been copied so much. And that's a problem with a lot of older classic movies. They've just been ripped off ad nauseum, you know, like we know the story beats, but I mean, even this one, like, man, I always forget, like, Humphrey Bogart just throws her away at the end, just throws her away, even tells her that he's only known her for like 2 days. I love you. Oh, I'm going to be thinking about you forever. I'm going to wait for you 20 years when you get out of jail, if they don't hang you by your pretty neck. And then, like, oh, when she goes away and the fucking elevator door closes and it's like prison bar shadow on her fucking face.
Yeah.
It is fucking perfect. It's just so fucking good, man. You just get done watching it and you're like, I can't believe they made a film like this in 1941 that is better than most films they made today. What the fuck are we doing wrong? Do we not just know how to write interesting, awesome scripts with good characters and just snappy dialogue that is just sped? Like, if this movie was made today, it would be 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yep.
Not changing anything else. It would literally be the dialogue, and we'd have all these reaction shots of characters overthinking everything. And in this movie, characters just blah, 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 blah. And then we see these little looks that the actors give. And they're doing such a good job just giving us these little moments, these little looks that we understand. Wait a minute. Maybe I don't know exactly what you're thinking, but I know what you're thinking isn't the words that came out of your mouth. That is awesome. And it is totally lost today. Maybe not totally, but it's just not mainstream. That's kind of a shame. 10, masterpiece. Are you looking up the... Oh.
I'm trying to understand some of these words. Suspenseful, labyrinthian, and brilliantly cast, The Maltese Falcon is one of the most influential noirs, as well as a showcase for Humphrey Bogart at his finest. Rotten Tomatoes brings The Maltese Falcon in with a 99% tomato meter and a 91% audience score.
99. Wow. Oof. To 91.
Only Toy Story does any better.
One motherfucker out there is like, I'm gonna be the guy.
It was all right, you know.
You know,
wasn't in color.
The dialogue was just too fast.
I couldn't understand what he was saying.
Yeah,
I saw the poster and it said a story as explosive as his blazing automatics. He only had those automatics in one scene, and he didn't shoot them. I was pissed. Whatever. Anybody got anything else? So with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us an email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Movie Crew Pod. Jared, where can that audience follow you?
That audience can follow me on Instagram at CheckTheGate.
I guess our audience or the listeners or, you know, whatever. I said that weird. I'm sorry. Griggs, where can the audience, our audience, follow you?
This is an audience inclusive podcast, and I am on Instagram at Griggsy Media. That's GRIGGSY Media.
And Kristen, where can they find you?
You can find me at Kristen on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene.
What the fuck
I'm
is
sorry, wrong? God damn it! Fucking Griggs cracked me up so much. Fucking include. God damn it.
Audience inclusive. Yes.
Oh, and you guys can find me on Twitter at Elkins Edits, and I don't know. You know what? We're gonna play the main titles because that's got a little bit of that the old Warner logo, actually, like the studio the music. Yes, there we go. Thank you. Incorporated into the theme, and if you listen to it, it actually has that Looney Tunes beat to it a little bit.
Interesting.
Doesn't quite go there, but it comes close.